You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. HuntStand is the most popular and functional mobile hunting app on the market. With a variety of base maps to choose from, satellite imagery that is updated every month, the ability to check the weather, know property information, and even catalog your trail cam pics, HuntStand even gives you the ability to import pins and location markers from other mobile apps. Visit HuntStand.com or download wherever you download your apps. Enter discount code SN20 at checkout for 20% off.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the O2 Podcast. Andrew and Paul are here tonight. Get you a quick little intro rundown for this week's episode. Paul, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing all right, man. I'm back in Ohio. It's a long, dang, man, almost two full weeks. In Florida, my voice is still a little scratchy. I don't know what. I picked up something down there, so getting better. But no, man, I saw four Osceolas hit the dirt last couple days, so that's good. Good week. Good way to start the turkey season.
Yeah, man, you guys are on it. You got yours. I think we talked about that, but the man, you're out there with other people from down there and around the country, right? Or
yeah, so I the first day of, and I'm using this term very loosely, guiding, I was with Mike Pentecost from Woodhaven, his son Isaac, Mike's friend Philip, and Dylan, who did some video work. Dylan got to shoot a turkey. Isaac got to shoot a turkey. So, you know, Mike and I, we talked quite a bit, and he's just like, man, that guy's killed a ton of turkeys. He wants to get his son, you know, and get him a nice Royal Slam this year. And it was cool, man. It was really neat to see them.
What is a Royal Slam?
So Royal Slam is the four main subspecies. So the Osceola, the Eastern, the Merriam's, the Rio Grande, and then the fifth subspecies that we have in the U.S., just in small spots, but mostly in Mexico, is the Gould's turkey. So that's a Royal Slam.
What's a Grand Slam?
Slam is just the first four. Osceola, Easterns, Rios, and Merriam's. Okay. And then you have the Gould's, and that gets you your Royal Slam. That's what that's considered. So Isaac's chasing that this year, and it was really neat. I was the facilitator, I guess, for the Osceola portion of that. So it's actually a double Royal Slam. So he's going to kill two of all of those turkeys. That's his plan. So, but it was really neat, man, being in the woods with those guys and being around like a guy like Mike Pentecost, who is a world champion caller. I mean, he's one of the best in the entire country at friction calling, which is what I do most of the time. It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. I learned more in 5 hours with Mike Pentecost than I have in 15 years in the turkey woods.
Did you master that? You master that diaphragm call yet?
No, he didn't even mess with those things. So no? I have no interest in using a mouth call.
But yeah, it was really cool. And disappointed.
And then my friend Duke came down from New York, and we were it was just Duke and I on that hunt, and that was a really neat hunt. Same farm in Florida. We had scouted a couple of days before, found some turkeys in the area. We had two toms, gobbling hard on limb, hit the ground. They had three hens with them, which is normally like that's really hard to combat. And they kept working across this field, like just walking through. And the day before, with Mike, we'd had some hen pressure, and the way that he called on this little cluck and purr pot that Woodhaven makes, and just the way that he called and how he called, and how often, how aggressive, I latched onto that. I'm like, that's amazing. And I just replicated that, and dude, those turkeys, it took about 20 minutes to pull off those hens, but they were just like, wow, we can't do it. We can't, we have to go see what's going on over here. And so these two big old toms, I posted some videos to TikTok and Instagram and Go Wild of this turkey gobbling after we had shot his friend. And it's like 65 degrees, but the dew point was crazy. The fog was intense, and this turkey gobbles, and you can see like the breath coming. He looks like a fire breathing dragon. It was really neat. So, yeah, got that done for Duke. That was really cool, man. What a week.
That was neat. I saw that video pop up. That was pretty sweet. So,
yeah, it was wild.
Well, so, good, man.
Yeah, check that out.
Congrats on a successful trip. And
thank you, man.
Yeah, proud of you, Paul. Proud of you.
What a way. Kick off the season the right way, as I say.
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot to report from the great of outdoors. I'm trying to think. I probably did something. I'm still getting ready for this trip, which kind of we'll get into that in a second. But let's go through real quick, and thank you to our partners, Half Rack, half-rack.com. Paul, we just got our hands on some hunter hangers. So these are one of the new products they launched. Kind of cool. You just screw it into the wall, and it can hang all kinds of stuff. So up to 50 pounds.
Gear, bows, bags, all sorts of stuff. It's pretty neat, yeah.
Not super, like, we were discussing a little bit ago. There's a lot of things out there you can hang stuff from, hooks and different things, but they're not tacky looking. It's not a nail. Like, it actually looks.
No.
It's well done. So they sell
it. It is, yeah. I like it.
Pack of two or pack of 10, bunch of different colors. Check out those guys. We have a code for them, Paul. Uh-oh, I should have had that ready. If you go on their site and buy from them, our code is Ohio Outdoors 15. So this will get you 15% off. Not a bad deal.
That's a pretty good deal, man. 15% off. There you go. Hunter Hanger. They got the meat lug coming out here in a few weeks. What, mid-June, something like that. That
super thing's stoked. Pretty neat.
Yeah, what's that?
Super stoked for that one.
Yeah, pretty cool. Boonsling, that's my favorite thing that they sell. That gunsling is pretty neat. So thanks to those guys, half-rack.com. You can find them on Go Wild, find them on Instagram. So thanks to our friends at Go Wild for us talking about it. They got a ton of stuff for turkey season. Check them out. TimeToGoWild.com. Download GoWild.com. You can find the app on Apple or Android. Find us on there. O2 Podcast, Paul Campbell. Man, they got some really neat stuff for the turkey hunter this spring. Some really cool articles too. How-tos, gear setups, really good information. You got the really cool community. You sign up, you get $10 off your first order.
And there still is time, I believe, to enter. If you join Go Wild, you entered into the UTV giveaway, which is a sick, like, $40,000 get up. So you can send your code to people or your link to people, and I think that also enters you if they join. Whatever. Totally worth the sign on there. Let's see. We've got Midwest Gunworks. So thanks to Cameron and the folks out there for being a supporter of our show. They are your one-stop shop there for all kinds of gun stuff, ammo, parts, pieces, accessories, guns, and the customer service is outstanding. Sweet operation out there. They got it going on. They've been selling stuff online since before that was cool, and they got a really nice website to get you headed down the right way. So check them
Ohio
out.
Outdoors 5. Save yourself 5% on your purchase.
Yep. What else we got? First Light. We saw your First Light gear when you're out there killing those turkeys. So
yeah, I'll tell you what, that man, I said last week, that wick, short sleeve wick hoodie with the leafy phantom suit in that hot weather during turkey season, man, that is a lifesaver. It really is.
Yeah.
So
and early deer season.
I mean, there were days, dude, it was 90 degrees when I was hunting. Yep. Hot, muggy Florida weather, man. That thing really, really did save the day. So
hot.
I don't know.
It's on.
What is that?
I don't know.
I like it.
It was in Celebrity Jeopardy, I think. If it's not cold, it's hot. I don't know. And you remember that skit on Saturday Night Live?
I do not. No, I'll have to YouTube it.
Next road trip, buddy. Next road trip. We come see Glenn. We go see Glenn. We're going to watch it on the way up there.
Yeah.
All right. So last partner that we got here is X-Vision, right? And so this is what our talk today is going to be about. And try to put this in a nutshell, because I would do recap some of it during the show. It was me and Paul was out slaying turkeys, so I was the interviewer, and we talked to I got you guys. When I read the last name, it's going to be like, you see why it's taking me a second to find this. I want to try
Sawyer. That's his first name. Yeah. We'll get that out of the way. Sawyer from X Vision.
Last name
We'll let him pronounce it. Don't even try to
That's how we started the show, so I should just let that go.
Yeah, there you go. Sawyer from X-Vision. Great guy.
But here's the deal. So X-Vision is in the thermal optics business. They also do some night vision stuff. But as he'll talk, that night vision kind of world, I think it's IR, is considered the same thing as night vision. That's tapped out, right? So the future is in the thermals. It's picking up heat and being able to see, you know, things in the dark, that kind of stuff. He gives you all the specs. He goes through the visible spectrum and all that kind of stuff. So if you're really ready to geek out on that, here you go. For my pea brain, this is a new piece of equipment on top of a gun that, you know, trying to get it sighted in and mess with the technology in there. They've got a pretty simple platform. Like, it's not hard to figure out. The product is very user-friendly. I posted my one shot with, at the Groundhog that was awesome, and get, you know, I mean, you can record it to your phone, all this kind of stuff. It's just, it's not a standard optic. It's not a piece of glass. It is literally a computer screen that is doing all this. And it's sweet, man. It's really,
it cool. is, it is sweet. It looks real wild.
And the technology of thermals, like, he'll talk about it, but the potential there, I mean, it's going to continue to grow. You know, when we were messing around with it up there in Michigan, Paul, it was like walk across the hardwood floor and you could see the prints of your feet, like the heat just still left on the ground. It's just insane. It's insane. So it's very cool. Let's get the website pulled up here. XVisionOptics.com.
Yeah, so if you're hunting coyotes or boar, pigs, groundhogs, coons, something, I mean, that thing's going to be a really good addition to your rifle setup.
Yeah, absolutely. And they've got other things, just sights, you know, binoculars, monoculars, that kind of stuff. You know, I don't think we really covered it. I want to get the guy on someday, but the drone deer guy, recovery, who's out of Ohio, you know, he uses the thermal on his drone to find the heat from the deer. You know, it's just a really cool technology. It's kind of that next greatest thing, that we've been introduced to. So, if this isn't your thing, as far as night hunting, coyotes, hogs, any of that kind of stuff, I'd still sell you to give it a listen because it's an interesting science and I have no idea where it'll go down the road, but definitely something that's very, very interesting.
So. And to your point, they have a bunch of range finding binoculars and range finders and regular binoculars. They got quite a selection of products. So yeah. They got some cool stuff.
Very cool. So check them out. XVisionOptics.com. Like I said, we got the show here with Sawyer. This is part of this show is I'll hopefully be able to report back to you next week. I'm going to take a little trip down south to visit our friend John Hudspeth from the Oklahoma Outdoors podcast. Nick Otto's coming down, the Huntivore. So we're going to do some hog hunting down there. I think I might swing by in Missouri. No, I know I'm swinging by in Missouri to hang out with Andy and Micah and go see if we can round up some coyotes out there. And so hopefully, fingers crossed, we can come back with some good stories and hopefully some good videos to show of what these optics actually can do. So pretty excited.
Yeah, man. Good luck with that. That's going to be a ton of fun. I wish I was going.
Yeah, it's I'm excited. We'll put it that way. So I got a lot to do before I go, but such is life, right? So anywho.
Yes, it is.
We got any news around the state, Paul? Look at me, just all...
Yeah, there was a couple things that we had talked about, but I don't think there's anything.
Okay, we'll go real quick.
Read your rule book, right?
Oh, buddy. Future Foresters, Camp Canopy registration is open. So ODNR, Division of Forestry, is looking for new future foresters, biologists, and conservation leaders for tomorrow. So if you've completed the eighth grade, you're eligible for this. This is kids... students getting into any of those type of, you know, career paths, and they want to take some time. It'll be June 11th to 16th. It is at FFA Camp Muskingum on Leesville Lake in Carroll County.
That's pretty country out there, man.
Oh, yeah. So it sounds like it'd be a good, good place to, if you're interested in that, you got kids interested in that, get them down there, see what they can get into, and build that desire to enter, you know, the outdoor careers. So the other thing I had, Paul, volunteers needed for the Ohio Sandhill Crane Survey. So a volunteer-driven sandhill crane survey to locate breeding birds in Ohio will be Saturday, April 15th. If you go to ODNR's website, you can find more about this. They're coordinating this project as part of the Midwest Crane Count with the International Crane Foundation and the Ohio Bird Conservation Initiative. This year, the counts will occur in these counties. I'm going to read them off. There's a lot. So you probably aren't too far away from any given one. But Ashland, Columbiana, Delaware, Erie, Franklin, Fulton, Geauga, Hardin, Holmes, Knox, Lake, Licking, Logan, Lorain, Lucas, Mahoning, Marion, Morrow, Ottawa, Pickaway, Portage, Richland, Sandusky, Stark, Summit, Trumbull, Wayne, Williams, and Wyandotte. If you would like to go out and count sandhill cranes, you can do that in one of those counties. So go to check out ODNR's website, ohiodnr.gov, and there is more information there. Counting the birds, Paul.
I saw a bunch of cranes down in Florida.
Yeah.
Breeding. I saw little baby cranes running around. It was kind of cool. You know, the other thing that was really weird, and we're going to get off track here just a little bit. When I was down there, I saw a fawn with spots in Florida, like a brand new baby deer just hanging out in the second week of March. Like, how crazy is that? I guess that's just their time to breed down there.
I'm trying to think.
I don't know. I feel Look at this. I'm gonna send you a picture right now. We're making great radio here, but
I feel like I've heard this, but their season is open like 9 months of the year. 10 months?
Their fall turkey season starts the last like July 28th. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, they got different. It's just different, I guess, everything. So
yeah, I saw bucks in velvet down there.
That sure is a doe with spots.
It's a fawn with spots. Yeah. How crazy is that? Who knew? And I'm sure you know the guys down in Florida are just like, yeah. So what about it?
Gator bait.
Gator bait. It's a whole bunch of those suckers. Duh.
Yeah, you can keep that. Anywho, we will get to our show here with Sawyer from X-Vision. Ladies and gentlemen, we appreciate you. We appreciate everything, reviews, comments, interactions with us. Keep it up.
Oh, yeah.
Keep it up.
Yeah, we really appreciate you guys.
Especially as we get into turkey and the walleye start running and different things. Share pictures with us, and we'll pump them out there. So we appreciate you.
Yeah, good stuff.
Have a great week, everybody. All right, so today on the line, I've got Sawyer. And Sawyer's from X-Vision. Sawyer, I am not going to try to butcher your last name. Do you want to give that to everybody and tell us about yourself?
Fallins B. DeLong.
Fallins B. DeLong. What is the background of that last name? Where's it come from?
I mean, we've been in America a long time, and I don't think you get 16 letters in your last name unless you're some kind of mutt. So I would assume it is a combination of a lot of different heritages and a lot of people just putting letters together at some point and creating what is my last name now. So
that's great. No, I was talking with Glenn and I was like, all right, I have no idea. And he rattled it off and I'm just like, oh, yep. Okay. We'll say that.
It's fairly phonetic. It just, again, you look at it, it's fairly intimidating. So awesome. I get it. And I've heard it pronounced 1,000 different ways. So I wouldn't feel bad about it.
Yeah. So, well, Sawyer, what's your position over at X-Vision?
So I am the national sales manager. So dealing primarily with the reps, the big box accounts, and then buy groups and all the dealers and stuff like that as well. But obviously here I am on a marketing side of it. So we are fairly flexible here at X-Vision Optics.
There you go. And X-Vision, you guys been around for a while? Is this new? You new to the game? Or tell me about the company.
Yep. So we're a little over 8 years old in total. I've been with the company going on close to 5 years now. So we had an ownership change just shy of 3 years ago. So I was working with a couple other lines at the time as the national sales manager there. And then Chris and Rich, our owners now, bought out the remaining percentage of the company back in end of 2019. They bought the first chunk, and then the end of 2020 they bought the second chunk. So, and then I came with it. So, but yeah, did that answer your question?
Yeah. Did you guys start in the thermal world, or?
Nope. So digital IR was pretty much our bread and butter for the first handful of years. So infrared binoculars, stuff like that. The digital side makes it a lot more cost effective, a little more clear, and some more options in terms of picture record and stuff like that. So that did very well with us. As we grew with that, we added some more traditional optics to our lineup within, you know, for a couple years with rangefinders, red dots, stuff like that. And we started getting into the thermals. So at the end of 2021 was our launch into thermals. And we launched with a thermal reflex, a thermal scope, and a thermal monocular. And then have just grown and added from there. But yeah, thermal and infrared technology is where we'll stay, and definitely our bread and butter.
And so this for me and Paul, and Paul's not able to join us today. He's still off in his turkey rendezvous. we were kind of introduced to this last year up at Deer Camp, and I guess I've heard the idea, never really thought much about it, considered it, anything like that. I've listened and talked to the guys out at the Missouri Woods and Water podcast. They do a lot of coyote hunting. They're big on the thermal stuff. But it's after having time to play around with the scope and whatnot, it's very different. And it's not your standard optic. It's not, like anything I've ever really used before. It's almost like a video game. And I jokingly have told people it's like that Step Brothers, line in the movie where they're like, what'd be better if you had this when you're 16? It's better when you have it when you're 40, you know, but it's like night vision. And when we were up in Michigan, we had that bear that just kept circling the cabin. It was like, well, we could see him. There's Terry. He's walking back and forth. And it's all this stuff that, you know, it's a video game like almost, and it's just not something that, you know, I ever thought I would have the ability to utilize. So I don't know, man. It's we're going to talk about this scope that we're going to take down to hunt hogs here in a week or so, I guess.
Less than a week, eh?
Less than a week. So I don't know what's the science behind this, because it isn't your traditional optic. It's not a piece of glass with, you know, a couple dials go up and down and left and right and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and there's a lot of moving parts there, right? You know, just to touch base on your first notes with feeling like a kid again, unless you've played with thermals before, right, you look at the price tags and you go, this is crazy, doesn't make any sense. The second you start using one or try one out, it is kind of a mind-blowing, you know, I did not think this was possible, or, you know, yeah, you're back in the Predator versus Alien movies and stuff like that, right, except you can actually kill pigs, coyotes, and whatnot with it. And there's a lot more applications too, with tracking, scouting, scanning. I mean, even we have a lot of, you know, farm and home guys for cattle, livestock, electric fences, checking fence lines and stuff like that. I mean, you can see studs in exterior walls. I mean, for the first, like when we got our first prototypes in, I just watched my dogs run around the carpet in my house, and you can see those details in their paw pad, you know, the prints that they leave behind for minutes and minutes. It is pretty cool. But the science behind it, I guess the best, and I don't want to say the easiest way to kind of understand where it's at is, you know, if you take our light spectrum, right, and I'll kind of touch base on the IR side, and don't quote me on these exact numbers because I'm a sales guy, right? So, but like our visual light spectrum, and it's going to be measured in nanometers, which is just your wavelengths, right? But our visual light spectrum is going to happen, you know, somewhere between like 100 nanometers and say 250 nanometers, right? And that's where we'll have the different colors come into play, right? And then pretty much at 250 nanometers is where that red is taking over. So like some of our thermal products have, you know, quick target acquisition lasers or lasers built in. as an actual laser pointer. But like those are going to be running like 650 nanometers, right? So you're taking over in that light side of the spectrum and you're getting farther down that spectrum. And then like IR, so a lot of like our competitors' IR on the digital side, so you're outputting an IR light. You're outputting a light. It's on that light spectrum. It's just past our visual, like mammals cannot pick it up and it does nothing for us essentially, right? So as we get farther away from our visual light spectrum of that 100 to 250, you have, you know, actual lasers around 600, give or take, right? And then IR, most people run like 850 nanometer lights on them. And that's, you can see a small red hue coming out because that 900 nanometers is where we can't see anything. No red, no nothing, no light, whatever, right? And that's pretty consistent for mammals across the board. Like our scope, our IR scope will run 940 nanometers. So you get a little bit clearer of an image. I should say a lot clearer of an image, but also it's completely invisible. And that's like you took like a digital IR binocular, took a strong IR light and, you know, scanned it across a field in pitch black. It's going to look just like a big mag light scanning across the field. It's invisible, right? So there's, you know, your IR cutter, your screens, your noise reduction filters, stuff like that on the digital or the technology side that helps pretty much take the illuminated image that we can't see because it's past our visual light spectrum and spit it onto a TV screen so we can see it. Right? And that's in the digital IR side. And then as you grow, right, you're going through different wavelengths, but the next one, like thermal, and again, don't quote me on these numbers, but you're going to live at like, you know, 18,000, 20,000 nanometers, right? So you're, you know, visual light, very small window for us to be able to see red, green, blue, yellow, right? All those fun things. Actual red laser pointers, you know, 600, IR, 900, infrared, and then thermals, you know, 15 plus thousand out, right? So it doesn't make sense necessarily connecting it all on one wavelength, but it's there. But thermal is going to be more of an image sensing, right? And you can get into the weeds with, you know, cooled cores. The biggest things in my mind that help you get a lot of clarity, help you utilize your thermal products that we make sure we put in there, right? Like your pixel size is going to give you more clarity. So like 12 micron pixel sizes or micrometer pixel sizes, smaller pixels, better detail on that TV screen, essentially. There is some, you know, cost savings where we can hit better price points by marrying. And you got to just slow me down when you need to slow me down or skip to the next subject, because I could talk about this for the next 5 hours of our lives. But what we focus on are those kind of smaller detailed specs. The NATD spec, which is for English, right, is just your temperature variation detection range or abilities. So like our thermals, that TS200 in your hands, that's going to be able to see like less than or equal to, I think it's 30 NETD, which translates to 0.05 degrees Fahrenheit. So 1/20th of 1 degree Fahrenheit is the temperature variation it can detect. So that's where you can go outside and you can look at a tree and you can see the branches, you can see the leaves, you can see the veins in the leaves, you can see, you know, you put your hand against the wall, you can see your veins in your hand and stuff like that in the print. So it gives you a lot better clarity, but it gives you more time in those situations, tracking, scanning, stuff like that. It's going to be a lot more sensitive. But again, it's, you know, you're thinking of like a black and white type where it needs to be really sensitive to give you that good clarity, wherein, you know, normal, non-digital, real life, we get that clarity because, in, you know, in a weird way, our eyes have really small pixel sizes we can pick up, right? But we have the color, we have the contrast, we have the shadings. So you kind of have to work a little harder on the thermal side or IR side to get that better clarity, which comes into play with the pixel size specs, you know, your NETD spec or your temperature variation detection spec. And then you got hertz, right? Your frame rates, right? So on digital, you kind of got to worry about, you know, if you're looking at a traditional IR or something like that, where it's amplifying surrounding light, not outputting light and putting it on a TV screen, right? So having a higher hertz or refresh rate, right, you're eliminating all that lag that you would get from, you know, a digital product, so to say. And it's gotten a lot better over the years. It's just those things that we can hone in on with our products, make them more cost effective for the consumers, but still deliver a very good, clear quality product.
Very good. I think I got all that. So, and just, you know, for if you've never used one, and realistically, I mean, we screwed around with the, I guess that was just kind of the Reflex site.
Yeah, that little compact one.
Yeah, that's what we had up there in Michigan. But when I started screwing around with this one, this thing is so much smarter than I am. It's incredible. That doesn't say a lot, but it's you're literally looking through this scope. I'm going to turn mine on here real quick. But there's like a computer screen, a little TV screen on the inside. So if you've never used one, this little screen pops up, and then, you know, you get your crosshairs and everything, and right away it'll start picking up heat on different stuff. And, you know, the picture shows up, and voila, you're ready to see what you're, you know, going after. Part of this, the learning curve, I think, well, besides the fact that it's really, really smart and can do a lot of things, you know, it's not just like turn left, turn right to be up and down. And you, even when I was going to shoot it for the first few times, I had to figure out a way to get a target that was hot, right, or warm enough that I could see it. Yeah. and stand out. So I hung little, you know, hand warmers up there on my board, just trying to get myself something to shoot at, which worked. It was fine. Is there other ways when it comes to sighting thermals in? Because I see somewhere you can buy like actual thermal sight or targets.
Yeah. And we'll like, I mean, a lot of our products will come with like little, I don't have any on my desk, but they're essentially foot warmers, right? But they're just a solid circle. I use foot warmers quite a bit just because they already have the sticky side. You put it on a piece of cardboard and you're good. But I've sighted these in with, you can have a nail, right? You just put a nail in the center cardboard, take a lighter, a torch, heat it up. It's going to show hot and your point of center for, you know, 10, 20, 30 minutes. I've sighted in our reflexes before by just licking my thumb, putting it on the center of a normal target, stepping back, taking my time and being able to do it that way. But there are thermal targets you can buy. They're expensive. Usually they're a one and done type of target. I wouldn't recommend them. I mean, they work great. It just, it's a lot of money for a one and done target. When a foot warmer is going to do the same thing, when a nail will do the same thing, and like tin foil works well as well. So just that tiny heat differentiation with the tin foil compared to the cardboard it's on. I've used like insulation tape, essentially, that's tin foily but sticky on one side and just made an X. So there are a million ways to kind of skin that cat, but just always remembering that you need some kind of heat differentiation to be able to have as a, you know, a point of center reference point with thermals is definitely critical to sighting them in.
And I'm going to go through some of the questions that I've had along the way. And I've been bothering you with, I can shoot this during the day, right? Assuming I have that heat source, you know, it's not going to damage it or anything like that.
Yep. So, I mean, you know, before there was concern with longevity of those thermal cores, and, you know, durability of those thermal cores or thermal sensors. And really that is the most expensive part of the, you know, the product you got right now, right? Like any thermal, the cost driver is going to be the quality of that thermal sensor in it. But now the thermal cores we have, there is no differentiation between night and day, right? And a lot of that was solved by getting those smaller temperature variation detection ranges, right? So the bigger range I can sense on that heat differentiation, the better detail clarity I'm going to have. Where at night, you know, not everything was getting heated up by the sun, so to say, right? Where during the day, everything's heated up by the sun. So, you know, years ago, right, you'd have some more blurriness, some more overflow of, you know, objects running into other objects, where now it's not a concern. It's not an issue at all, which is great. And in terms of thermal core longevity, I mean, these thermal sensors will outlast your, I mean, it will last 10 years longer than you ever want it to, because it's going to be 20 years old and there's going to be way cooler stuff out at that time anyways. So it's definitely come a long way. It's still, I mean, that's the awesome part about thermal, where we still have a long ways to go, and it's exciting, right? Coming out with new products. Our Reflex, you know, is a good example, where we launched that last year. I mean, to think that something that small, compact, lightweight, and versatile could have a detection range of 1,500 yards, I mean, it wasn't possible 5 years ago, right? So there are definitely some more cool, exciting stuff, and we got a couple fun things for you guys in the hopper next year. But that is the cool part about thermal. Like, it's still very much so growing. We're still discovering a lot of things we can do with the technology. Where with IR, we're fairly limited out right now. You know, we'll get to see farther, but it's a different world, and you can only shine a light so far, right? Even if it is invisible.
Right. Well, let's talk about some of the more basic functions of this, because that's where my brain is. The first thing I noticed, because, you know, I just start screwing around, twisting knobs and different things, is that I've got, like, hang on, all these different color choices to choose from. Green hot,
or palettes,
white hot, is that what we're calling palettes? Blue, yep. Hot, iron, adjustable, red hot. So what's the difference on those? Is that just a preference on your eye, or?
I would say it's almost entirely a preference. You can have, like, depending on your environment you're in, right? You can tailor that to a specific environment where red hot might work better, but it also ties into your reticle style and reticle colors, right? If I with my eyes, and I can see colors, but some people might not be able to see red, right, where they need to have green, well, then I wouldn't use the green palette setting, right? And you might want to do a red hot setting where the background is red, so you can clearly or better see that reticle and that contrast between, you know, essentially the optical image and that crosshair. So it helps tailor that product or the product to the customer, you know, across the board, with different eye capabilities, different preferences, stuff like that. And you can tailor it to the environment. It just, the level at which these scopes can see now and the clarity that you get, the tailoring your palette to your environment doesn't affect it very much at all anyways. So I've never, I mean, I like white hot, right? And I like a green crosshair, and it's a good contrast for me. It looks very clear. I think it is a clearer palette of all the palette options, but it is just pretty much my preference at this point. So, you know, with all my thermals at home, all of our products, they are pretty much all set to white hot with a green reticle.
And that's another thing. We can change the color of the reticle, right? How many colors?
Yep.
Eight, six?
Reticle colors, reticle style. So
you got 10 reticle
styles. I want to say this styles. One will have, what's that?
This has 10 reticle styles, I think.
Yep. 10 reticle styles, and they should have 6 reticle colors for those 10 different styles.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. It has the ability to zoom, right? So yep. Obviously once you're focused, you got your knobs for focusing, but then you can zoom in and out, and that's really easy. I mean, and does a really nice job, keeps it clear and anything like that.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, again, you know, comparing where thermals were even 3 years ago. And I mean, some of our competitors, but that's the hard part with magnifying, especially on higher powered thermals, right? Where you're going to pretty much have your base optical magnification. And then everything past that is going to be a digital compound magnification, right? So in reality, you're just magnifying, you know, you're taking a magnifier to a little TV screen, right? So that's where it's really important to have those small pixels and those better details in the scope, where you can zoom in all the way and still get a clear image. Where before, you know, you'd have something that's, you can go to 15 times magnification, but it has a really low thermal sensor, thermal core resolution, and hot, large pixels, right? So by the time you got to 6x magnification, it looked really pixelated, really blurry. By the time you got to 15x magnification, you have no idea what you're looking at, right? So I'm glad you say that. But yeah, I agree. I mean, that's, you know, those are where those smaller details come to play in as well, more so just because of that magnifying factor of digital magnification over optical magnification. But yeah, I mean, in terms of the zoom, especially with these scopes, like these scopes were a little bit more of a challenge for us just because we have a very, I don't know if this is the right way to put it, but we have a very keep it simple, stupid process in terms of operating a product, right? So you look at any of our products with the reflexes, with the scopes, even our night vision products, right? They are very user friendly because nobody reads a manual out of the box, regardless if they spend $6,000 on a scope or not, right? So being able to pull these out of the box, turn out yourself, right? And you can, you know, these scopes, you got picture record, internal memory, stadiometric range finder, picture in picture, hotspot tracking. I mean, you got a lot of bells and whistles. You got the phone applications that can run everything, that iPhone, Android, whatever, you can run it on a tablet. The Wi-Fi output, so it has its own Wi-Fi router in there, right, to connect to multiple platforms at the same time. It's got 150-yard range on that Wi-Fi router. There's so much, but I think a lot of companies got caught up in all the, can I swear on this? All the cool shit you can put in here, right? And you just kept adding more buttons. And it makes it very frustrating when you're in the field trying to hunt for something. You got to click 4 buttons before you can pull a trigger, right? So our goal is, you know, if I have any buttons at all I need to click, press, or do, only one. Like I only get one. And 90% of the time, that's going to be your magnification, right? You know, your palettes, reticle styles, reticle colors, all that back end stuff is going to happen ahead of time when you're in the field. Like, give me an easy way to access my magnification, and that's all I want, right? So this is nice. We're on these, the TS200 that you have and the TS300. You have that smooth zoom on that right turret, which is nice to be able to toggle through it that way, but you can also click on into the side of it. So it's a little button on the side of that turret that you can click in, and that'll toggle through your magnification as well. So you can do your smooth zoom or you can click to toggle quicker. But other than that, right, your left turret is the plug and play battery.
Rechargeable battery.
That was nice going through that learning curve 4 or 5 years ago, where being able to have batteries that you can pop in and out in the field is huge. Because I went through a year with the earlier products. We didn't have plug and play batteries, and they died after 5-6 hours of running around. And then you got to plug it in and wait, right? Or use an ancillary battery pack. So these are great. They all come with 2 batteries. You know, you run through 5, 6, 7 hours. The first one dies or gets close. Just pop it out, pop it in a new one, and you're good for another 6-7 hours.
Right.
I went a little down a rabbit hole.
Oh, no, you're
one specific question.
You are good. you're covering a lot of these topics that I was thinking about. All right. So when it comes to sighting it in, you got your heat source up there that you're shooting at. This is where my time screwing around with it has stopped, but I've been working off the 50 meter setting.
Yep.
Right. And then because you don't have a left, right, up, down dial to mess with, you guys, you go in and you mess with the axis, right? So,
yep. X, Y.
Yeah. You got your X axis, Y axis. If you need to go up or back or down or whatever, you just work with that. It's very easy. All that kind of stuff. Can you explain to me though, because this has got, I've only done the 50 meters, but it goes what? 100, 150, 200. Does it go up to 300?
I think it goes up to 500.
500. Okay.
So I think you got 50, 100, 200, 300, 500.
So does that essentially, you can set the settings for each one of those, and then it's like, okay, at 100 meters, it's this. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, I mean, to be honest, right, it's a little overkill. Again, it's once we write the program, it's easy to put in there regardless, and why not add more options if you want them? Great, they're there. If you don't use them. But yeah, and like in my mind, I'm not, especially most of my hunting, unless we go pig hunting down south, right? Most of my hunting is going to be like max of a 225, 250 yard shot, which keeps me in that sweet spot. So, you know, especially with like the 5.56 or 2.23 is the best example where if you get it sighted in at say 25 yards, right, you're going to have your point of impact, you know, crossing your line of bore or your point line of sight crossing your line of bore at 25 yards, right? And you're going to have some raise yet on that bullet. So you might raise, I would say, max of an inch, and then it'll come down and you'll have a second sight in essentially naturally with your caliber at about 225. So depending on, you know, like with the 200s and 300s, you know, you're going to bump up your calibers, right? Compared to like the reflex, where you're running 1 to 4 times magnification, you know, on the TS 200, you're running 2.3 to 9.2. So you might want a 308, a 6.5, a 243, right? And even in an AR-10 platform or just a bolt, where you might want to stretch that out. But those are going to be, you know, you're going to be closer to that 50 meters, where if I sight in my 308 at 50, or I don't know what the 6.5 is though, so I won't go down that rabbit hole. But say I sight in the 308 at 50 yards or 50 meters, I'm going to have that second point of impact or zero, you know, at like 205 meters. Right. So that's how I usually run it, where I'm just running off my 2 points of impact. And then if I'm going, you know, 400 yards out, I'll have my selected BDC reticle or a reticle, one of those reticle options that I know where my 400 or 500 yard distance is going to be at the second crosshair. Right. So I'm a little more, I don't want to say old school, but a little more rudimentary on that front when I'm using our products in this sense. But absolutely, you could sight in different. So you can sight it in having different grains, right? You can sight it in using those different distances, or you can save sight ins for multiple different platforms. But those distances are just kind of an extra, like, hey, if I do want to confirm my zero at 50, confirm my zero at 250, and confirm my zero at 500, you could set those sight in saves to it. So if you were in the field, you could just switch to the 500 yard spec and know that you can put your crosshair straight on center.
Gotcha. Makes sense. So if I'm in a stand and I, you know, I'm basically planning for 50 yard shot, and I got one at 100, I just click over to the 100, assuming it's all.
Yeah, you can. Again, in my mind, like you're going to be within an inch for sure, regardless. And my shooter ability or whatever you want to call that word is I'm happy within an inch regardless. Right. So you could, you know, fine tune it more. That's where I said it's a little overkill, where if I sight it in at 50, I know I'm going to be on till probably 250, and then I might be an inch low at 300, which again, I don't care about. So I am high or low an inch or on from 0 to 300 yards. And I'm not pulling a trigger past 300 yards. Gotcha. But those people that can and want to be more specific, they can, you know, sight in the 300 where, okay, I am driving attack at 300 yards. I'm not an inch low or 2 inches low, depending on your caliber and grains.
Yeah, I don't have that problem. I'm kind of more with you. Like, it, get me close. Because it's never the gun's fault. I can guarantee that. Or the sight.
It's been the gun's fault a few times on my side. That's what I tell people. Yeah. Already, so.
I think, hang on one second here. The coolest thing, and I've showed a lot of people this, is the ability for it to go to your phone. And I know a lot of things nowadays have apps, there's an app for that, right? And this thing, you hit the Wi-Fi, you log into it, you know, from the phone, the only thing you can't do is pull the trigger on the gun.
Right.
You start the recording, you can zoom in, you can change the settings, all this kind of stuff. And like you were saying, it does 150 yard Wi-Fi. So literally somebody could be sitting in a truck and you're 150 yards out controlling it from your phone, which is just insane. But I think the other thing that's really cool is that it gives you the ability to record that to your phone. And I guess one question, it has a memory card built in. So is it recording those videos to the memory card as well?
Yep. So you got 16 gigabytes built-in memory in the scope. So you can you can manage it on your phone. I mean, what I do is just every time I come back from a hunt, I'll just clear the scope, save them on my phone and clear the scope. But yeah, there is internal memory there as well.
You pull the memory card out then and clear it off of there?
Nope. So you can either do it via your phone or tablet or whatever is connected from the Wi-Fi, or you can connect it, you know, plug it in with the cords it comes with to your laptop. Gotcha. As well. So a couple options on cleaning there, but
yeah, so I'm not super tech savvy, but that part of it, you know, to get to your phone, do a quick editing. I sent you over the video, the groundhog that was causing disruption in my backyard. I will touch on that real quick. It's posted on our Go Wild account. I think it's on Instagram unless they've censored it off, but, that was the middle of the day. I had a groundhog at about 50 yards and I was, you know, I'm comfortable with where that scope was hitting when I was practicing. So I wanted to give it a real shot. And, that thing exploded. Now the gun caliber, probably a little bit too big for a groundhog, but the visual of it, when you see the guts flying out the back and you can see pieces and parts of this thing flying all over and through the screen and through the video.
Yeah.
It's not a blur. Like you can see legit chunks. It's picking up the heat from that. That was insane to me. Also funny was the cat that was hiding in the bushes behind me that I didn't really realize the cat was there. And I don't think the cat really realized what was happening either. It took off running the other direction, but,
did you have ballistic tips on?
Yes.
That helps.
Yeah.
I had one of our pro staffers send me a video. God, it might have been a year ago now, but he had a 308 with ballistic tips and he shot a coyote with it. And it was very, very similar to your groundhog, just a little more bits and pieces flying through the air. So it's
insane.
Yeah, that's a good video.
So, I'm sure there's like a million and a half other questions I'll have for you, but go ahead.
Just real quick, Andrew, to touch. I mean, with your, you know, the Wi-Fi comment and stuff like that, right? I mean, when we launched thermals the first time, the only thing that had Wi-Fi and then the picture record internal memory and stuff was that TM100 or thermal mono. Definitely user feedback in terms of like, there are people that want the picture record, right? And they're going to pay whatever to just have the picture record. But we had quite a bit of times, I mean, the nice part about my job is we get to go qualify, test. And I mean, we usually have a year cycle between getting our first production or pre-production units in finalized and just getting to beat them up, go on testing hunts, we'll call them, and get that, you know, real life field user experience. At least that's my excuse to ownership to keep going on hunts. Right. It not only ticks our boxes in terms of, or checks our boxes in terms of knowing like, okay, like, yeah, I threw it in the water and I left it there for 45 minutes. Our IP67 dustproof waterproof rating is valid because it, you know, that's setting the bar at 30 minutes, right? Especially when you're going in Texas and stuff like that, you are putting these things through not good conditions. But the big part of that in terms of Wi-Fi, right, and going through a year or so without having Wi-Fi capabilities and being able to share it, there's a lot of moments and then trying it out with some where you brought it up exactly. You're running around in a side-by-side, a truck, right? You can send one guy out to scan a field. Everybody can see the same thing. We have what we did the last time we went out is just set up a tablet with the Wi-Fi on the scope. It was actually the mono, but hooked up the Wi-Fi with the mono, set the tablet in there. One person just runs out and everybody in the truck can see the tablet on the front, you know, console and see everything that's happening. So it does kind of help bring your group together. But we also noticed in me going out with friends and industry people, right, there's usually only one, maybe two people in the group that has the really nice thermal, right? The 640 by 480 or 400, I mean, the better thermal end, and being able to have everybody connect their phones or their tablets or whatever, and just having one guy that can cover 1,000, 2,000 yards out and getting onto the pigs and getting into that, you know, 4, 3, 200 yard range where everybody else can use it then for their own products. So it was a nice learning curve, but yeah, definitely the Wi-Fi is, it, it, It makes it a better hunt, makes it easier, makes, you know, the connection with other devices, but also the people that you're going hunting with is great.
For sure, man. Well, we'll get you on again here to talk about the rest of the product line, right? We kind of focus on this TS200 scope here. We're going to give it a whirl down there in Oklahoma, and then actually maybe and Missouri, and then come back, and maybe we can talk about what else is, you guys have going on over there at X-Vision, if that sounds good to you.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Cool. Well, Sawyer, I appreciate your time today, and I'm pretty excited to get out there and give it a shot. Oh. So.
We'll touch base before you start pulling the trigger again, I'm sure. But yeah, good luck and have fun for sure. It is so much fun to use the thermals, pig hunts, coyote hunts. I'm sure you'll have plenty of fun.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Perfect. We'll talk to you soon, Andrew.